So I want to give you a warm welcome to our first session of Creating and Sustaining Strong Teams with Mickey Cashton.
Welcome, everyone, to this new segment of Collaboration in the Workplace. The focus is on teams. I would love it if I could hear from a few people. What is it that you're hoping to get from being part of this course? What attracts you to this topic? Sherry?
My colleagues and myself, we are developing a program for educators who are going back for a certification called leadership in their school systems. And right now we're teaching the educators about social emotional learning and collaborative classrooms, how to bring that to the children in their classroom. And now we've been asked to develop this new program called How to Build a Collaborative Team for those teachers going back for leadership certifications. And it was just wonderful timing because I saw this course and just thought I could just, you know, get lots of really rich resources from you and hear from you to help us develop this course for Thomas University.
Well, great. Thank you. Lupe?
I took a fantastic training with you last month, and I work as a consultant implementing change in companies in order to make them more productive, more effective, to achieve their goals faster and quality and so on. So I'm now absolutely convinced that this training is a very important tool for me in order to make these things happen easier and more in a more satisfying way for everybody. Like the change is sustainable through time, and they will take the changing or the new processes as their own, because they will get into the changing process from the beginning, the customers, the clients.
What I'm seeing, both of you, both Sherry and you, you're wanting to learn something here that you can bring to teams that you are consulting or training or teaching. And I hope this can be of help, and thanks for being here, Lupe. I am wondering if there's anyone here who is actually working in a team and hoping to bring what you're learning here to your own team and how your own team functions. That would be interesting for me to hear about. Is there anyone here in that capacity? Where are you calling from?
I'm from Cyprus.
Cyprus. Wow.
Yeah, and I'm on the very early stage of forming a team for a family camp. And that is why I'm really curious how to make it happen very an easy way, because I see how my attempt to become a leader in kind of traditional way, they like my habit.
Yeah.
I would like to, probably not, it's for me, it's more of how I can create this team just from the beginning, that it's on the principles of empathy and relationships rather than just making things happen.
Yes, thank you. So you're pointing for me to a very big dilemma in the field. And here's how I see this dilemma. We come from decades and before that, centuries and before that, millennia of various forms of command and control, imposition, top-down authoritarianism. In response to that, in the last while, people have been rebelling and reacting against it. And you see in a lot of places a kind of reactive anti-authoritarianism, where there's no room for leadership. Leadership is bad. Power is bad. We need to all be equal. And the particular twist that comes from the nonviolent communication perspective is there is this thing about connection, and relationships are the highest good. And that ends up resulting in a lot of difficulty for two reasons, more than two reasons. One is it's reactive. Anything that is reactive is not thoughtful. Second, in my mind, leadership is a necessary quality. And so it's kind of like all is thrown out instead of grappling with how do we do leadership in a way that works. Third, there is I thought I heard from you, there is a way in which the old structures are internalized within us. Even when we try to do things differently, somehow the authoritarian thing comes up in any number of ways. And we'll get to that more in the following weeks. Not so much today, wasn't so much my intention, but just overall, it's either how we do power or how we respond to power is informed by the ways that all this historical thing has been internalized by us. So then we have teams that don't function. Many people go back to authoritarian because they say, well, it goes against human nature to be collaborative, without ever figuring out how to collaborate in a way that is effective. So all of this is what I'm hearing in and through your words. So for me, the breakthrough is to recognize that connection relationships are necessary. Focus on all of that is essential. And it is not for its own sake. It is in support of a purpose that is larger than the individuals that are there. And how to align in that way is a big task of our times. I'm wondering if this speaks to what you're struggling with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this balance of so many things, how to find it.
Yeah. Thank you. Let's hear from Leslie.
Well, the team that I work with is a small company, and I do some contract work for them. And so I feel like the teams that I work with are often reconstituting, depending upon what I am working on. So I might be working with fellow facilitators to prepare for a program. I might be supporting the marketing team in doing some planning and writing. I might be working on the design of some programs. So it's interesting to sort of have, you know, like what is the team, and the team shifts and changes. And most of the folks I don't see in person very often at all. Some of them I've only met once in person. So that's the context of the team that I work in that I want to be applying all of this to.
Okay, so you're adding to our, you know, basket of challenges, which is that more and more people work together when the context in which we evolved to be in relationship, and that context is people together in the same room with some way that our destinies are intertwined. It's more and more frayed. More and more people are
right
at distance. Without whatever it is that happens when bodies are present in the room together, we don't have that to rely on. So we need to have even more skill, capacity, presence, and awareness in other areas to make up for that. that's the extra challenge that I see you bringing to the table. So thank you.
Yeah, and another layer of challenge is, I think more often we're kind of on a contract, you know, basis. So, like, my connection and identity to the organization is a little more tangential. And not to further complicate things, but that is also a piece of it for me.
Can you say one more sentence about that?
In this organization, there's the partners, the people who founded it and who have some ownership in this small company. And then there's those of us who are, you know, paid on a project basis or on an hourly basis, and so we're not employees. So I find myself sometimes questioning, how much energy do I want to devote? How much authority do I have? Should I just shut up and do what they're telling me to do? Or should I bring my expertise and my perspective? It's just a different level of belonging and identifying with the mission, you know, I find inside myself.
Yeah. So in effect, the overwhelming majority of our work relationships are contractual. They're not intrinsic. But there is some formal difference between employee, which is a kind of a long-term contract with a fake commitment to the employee's well-being. Sorry to burst whatever bubble exists anywhere. But when you are on a per-hour contract work, it is official that no one cares about you. Am I making sense to you?
Right. I mean, the contractual rather than genuine connection is clearer.
Exactly. And so the task that you have, if you want to take it, is to refuse to accept the dehumanizing terms and to choose to engage as a full mm-hmm. member of the team, regardless. But it takes more work to do it when the setup interferes.
Right. And the risk in terms of all the benefits that flow from the financial exchange feel higher to me, because that financial relationship could be so easily severed. I don't genuinely think it would be, but that, you know, that inherent threat just kind of hangs more obviously.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm seeing a 5 from Curtis, and I want to, because 5 is used in 2 different ways on this call, I don't know if you meant you wanted to talk or you were happy with something that was said. And hi,
Curtis. Hi, Nikki. I just wanted to chime in on this because it's one of the reasons why I'm on the call as well. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Can you
hear the grin? I mean, you and I haven't talked in so many years.
Yes, that's another reason why I wanted to be on this course as well. I forgive the sound of the train. And how do I live my personal values, my deeply held beliefs, and to create the emotion?
Curtis, it's not the sound of the train that is the issue. It's that your sound cuts in and out. What I heard is, how do I live my personal values?
Yeah, what I heard the previous speaker talking about, is that better?
No, I can't hear you. Sorry.
Okay. Never mind. Go ahead. Just go.
I mean, I hear you in and out. It's unreliable. But I'm hearing you kind of like put front and center the question of integrity in the work world overall. We lost We lost Curtis altogether. Leslie, are you complete?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Helen, did you want to speak?
I did. There was just something in me that really gave me a wish to speak up when you spoke about a contractual work relationship being on having more dehumanizing terms, perhaps than an employee. And there's a part in me that just wants to offer a somewhat different perspective, because I'm in that kind of a relationship with people with whom I'm having very deep connections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I see it more as a way that we're trying to craft. There's not financial security for employment. And I just somehow wanted to speak up for there being many different ways that you can work on contractual basis together.
Yes, I may be in kind of like a marginal minority. In my mind, contractual relationships, the contract doesn't support the existence of a deep meaningful connection. The existence of a deep meaningful connection happens on top of the contract. The contract doesn't create it. In fact, in my mind, the contract often would interfere with it unless the people explicitly and deliberately do something different. And it's not to say that people don't manage to do that and find tremendous meaning in their relationships. It's that I have a deep mourning about the foundation of exchange relationships in so much of what we do, rather than relationships built on generosity and care. So I'm not saying that people are unable to create relationships of generosity and care even when there is an exchange. It's that the legal foundation of a contract is not based on generosity and care. It's based on protection and separation, the legal part of it.
Mm.
I'm wondering,
I think that you're actually moving away from contracts more and more, which I think supports what you are saying.
Who is moving away from contract more and more? I miss that.
The people I am collaborating with are basically letting go of the contracts we used to have.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to point everybody's attention to a project, the founders of which I know personally and well. It is now called the Blueprint of We. And what they have created is a different method for having agreements about working together that is not contractual. I invite everybody to look at it who is interested, because I find immense beauty in it. They tell me that even when they work with corporations, they no longer will sign a contract. They will only work with people who are willing to do the work using that method, which basically is a method that goes from that includes meaning, relationship, and purpose, all of it. It's like, why are we entering this relationship? What do we need to know about each other in order to work well? What are our agreements about what to do when there are differences or conflicts? And if the relationship comes to an end, how are we going to handle that? It's of great beauty to me, and I find it a robust and solid alternative. So I feel complete with this if you are, but if you are not, I would like to support us in settling together. So let me know.
I'm complete and inspired by what you mentioned.
Okay, thank you. All right. So let's hear from Jan.
Thanks, Nikki. Yes, one of the reasons I've joined the call is that there has been a kind of a shift within where I work. I work in healthcare IT on the part of some new leaders, and there is much greater interest in collaboration and supporting people kind of get some skills to collaborate more, but there's, you know, there's a big gap in all of our kind of capacity to collaborate. And and I've joined a couple of teams where I'm sort of playing a role in the teams. I'm not leading them, but I'm sort of supporting the lead who is very open to learn, as I am. And so I hope to learn things I can pass on to him and have what is this intention and enthusiasm. We have a lot of new doctors and nurses come on the team right now. And I've just seen in the past this happened before, and it hasn't, you know, it hasn't borne fruit. So I'd just really like to learn how to support that, to have it successful, more successful.
Thank you. Great. Yeah, I think it's kind of like the word collaboration is becoming progressively more prominent in the last few years, which gives me a lot of hope, actually. And at the same time, there's very little about how to do it, and especially how to do it on a team, so that collaboration is truly about what to do to work together, especially when things don't work out. Often people mix up collaboration with being part of a project together rather than doing solo work. But collaboration is so much more than this. It has to do with decisions. It has to do with working out differences, with sharing feedback, with a host of things that that people often don't know how to do. Collaboration breaks down when people encounter challenges and lack tools for attending to them. So I'm really pleased that people are turning to you for support, and hope that this course can support you with that. Thanks. Okay, two more folks, and then we'll see where we go next. Teresa and Warren, and then we'll be done with this round.
Hi, this is Teresa. And my colleague Marcos is here with me as well.
Hello.
Can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay. So Marcos and I manage two teams at a large nonprofit in San Jose, California, and I guess I won't speak for Marcos, but for my part, one thing that I'm specifically interested with my team is getting us to a point. We work in a really stressful environment, and burnout is a big issue with us, and having people, we do a lot of hard work that needs to get done on a daily basis, a lot of just basic warehouse work, and we have a lot of really high-functioning people on our team, so that can be really really demoralizing for people sometimes just to be getting that work done. And so looking for ways to get the work done but also not lose sight of the bigger picture of building community and ending poverty, and also just ways to have everybody feel like their voice matters and that they're valued and still get the work done.
Yes. Yes. In other words, to just sit around and talk all day and connect and feel good about each other and all of that and not get the work done is not an option. So
yeah,
there has to be a way to give people a sense that they matter, to create a sense of team and belonging and meaning and shared purpose that everyone understands without it taking all the time. And at
exactly.
the same time, to do it rather than being so afraid that it will take the whole time that people don't do it at all. The number of times that I encounter teams that don't have regular meetings is stunning to me, because they somehow they only have meetings when there is an issue to resolve. It reminds me of times when I was working with couples many, 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 many years ago, and there was this one particular couple that came to me in a great deal of crisis. And we did two sessions, and they canceled the one afterwards because they said they were doing so much better they didn't need it. I said, okay, fine. I don't know, a month or two later, they call me in crisis, we must see you. So you would think they learned the lesson. They once again came for a couple of sessions, and then they counseled again because they no longer had an issue. And they continued in this pattern until they broke up. Instead of, it's not like I didn't speak up and tell them, if you are getting better, you know, invest the energy in creating the infrastructure of your relationship in some way that will sustain you so there would be less crisis. And they couldn't go there. And I have a sense that a lot of teams operate in this way. We will deal with something when there's crisis, but otherwise we have too much work to do to have meetings. Something like this. Is this kind of familiar to you?
Yeah, that rings true.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. And last is Warren.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Mickey. So I'm up here in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And I work on basically, for lack of a better term, the BC, all the British Columbia kind of provincial board for nonviolent communication.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that, you know, I guess like that's the team that I work with that specifically I've come here for. And one of the struggles we definitely have is the fact that we live in different places within the province, which is like a state in the States. So face-to-face meetings are really challenging. Like it's hard for us all to find the time and energy for us all to meet up. Mm-hmm. So a lot of our connection happens online.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just a bit of a, obviously there's some barriers to that. And just hearing what you've already said about like the importance of the connection. I guess just with that in mind, some maybe things to think about, strategies, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you, Warren. So I want to say, a few more words and then invite you to be in small groups to explore things more deeply in your own context and then come back and kind of like engage with some of what emerges in the small groups. But let me say first, you know, kind of like paint a picture of what I see that creates a strong team. And it starts to me with a clear sense of shared purpose. Just because, especially in larger organizations, in smaller organizations, very often there's really one team and not really multiple teams. You can divide it into multiple teams. And still, if the whole organization is small enough that everyone can be in a room together, there is some sense of purpose that binds that whole group, which is the purpose of the organization as a whole. When you get into larger organizations and divisions and departments and this group and that group, it is very often not clear to people what it is that makes their team a team. What is the specific purpose? They know very well what their tasks are, what their personal job is. I mean, sometimes they don't even know that, but it's assumed that they do. they know that. They know who they interact with to get information, to provide advice, to get or give guidance. They know that. It's not necessarily fully articulated, but they know it. Why they are a team, in other words, they are called a team, but why they are a team is hard, it's sometimes hard to know. And I would like to share a little story about a time when I did a project with a company where we did, we worked to identify a sense of shared purpose for each of the teams that existed in the company. And this was a small production company. So they had, sadly, they had the production workers that were kind of in a separate category from the people that I was working with. And I feel some sadness when I remember this and how little I understood the ramifications of that separation. But that's probably a story for another day. So I was in a room with about 35 people. And the first revelation that happened was when we divided the group into teams. And there were several people that were surprised. And then it went beyond surprise. It went into a place of, oh, of course, who they found themselves in a team with. Because we put some thought into that, the owners of the company and myself, like who would be in a team. And they had some discussion about it and they reached a sense of clarity. Yes, I do belong here with these people. Not only that, once I'm with them, something about understanding my own work changes. That is one of the intangibles that makes a team a team. And we gave the assignment to each of these groups to find its sense of shared purpose. What was its shared purpose? And some of the groups were able to find it right away, like within the hour that we had at the time. And some of the groups worked longer to find it. And the moment that stands out to me the most from that exercise was the moment when the administrative team finished the task. It may be that some people have heard this from me already. I hope you don't mind hearing it again. I just want to find it. Give me a moment. I'm going to read to you the shared purpose that they came up with. The admin / finance team, here's what they came up with as the statement of shared purpose. To be the hub of support to all organizational functions in a timely, accurate, and receptive manner. And then what happened after all the little quibbles about words ended and somebody read it out loud, spontaneously one person in the room said, "Now I know why I am important." And you could feel that capturing something that happened in the group on that day, that they understood the meaning of their work as being part of that team in an entirely new way. So it's essential in my mind for every team to have a clear statement of shared purpose that is really shared. It's not imposed from above. Really shared by the people themselves. They get it, they participate in creating it, they understand it. So I want to pause here and see if anybody has comments or questions about this bit of creating a statement of shared purpose. Any questions? Press 1 if you have questions or comments. Does it resonate with your experience or not? All of that. It's confusing to me that I don't see any. Okay, I'm glad somebody wants to speak. Yes, Timo.
Hi, Mickey. I really enjoyed that story, and the question that comes up for me is particularly around the imposing part is, well, what happens when a team's composition changes? Because that happens in organizations sometimes all the time. And what do you do then? I mean, do you go through the whole process again? Do you get the person's buy-in or get their input if they'd like to change things and then have a discussion with the team? How do you handle that?
Thank you. I really love this question. It's simple and practical, and I have what I hope is a simple and practical, though slightly radical perspective, which is, first of all, I would want anybody who's going to be changing teams to first be aware of the team purpose that they are invited to join. And such that if they can't say, yeah, this purpose resonates for me, perhaps it doesn't make sense for them to switch places into that team. Number one. Does that address some of your question? Part of it?
Yeah, to some extent.
Yeah. Then there's a whole other thing, which is, and this is the something that I, in this moment, I would sadly call it the Occupy syndrome. The Occupy syndrome is decisions are only valid until the next meeting. And at the next meeting, everybody could, question the decisions, or new people come and say, wait a minute, I wasn't there, blah, blah, blah. All of that is not sustainable. So one of the things that ongoing teams need to look at, to figure out and to be conscious about is when we make a decision about something, for how long do we make it? And, you know, to go back specifically to shared purpose, I believe that shared purpose needs to be reviewed, but not necessarily every time somebody comes into the team. Maybe once a year, maybe every 6 months, maybe when a project is finished and a new big project starts. There are milestones or time intervals at which I want to review and redecide many things, including shared purpose. That is, for me, different from it constantly being up for grabs. Do you see what I mean about that?
Yeah, that makes sense. It would be probably frustrating, and people would question, I would think, how to hold the purpose if it was always up for debate. And yet, yeah, there does need to be some kind of flexibility or some kind of opportunity to revise it over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So essentially, you know, and this goes into, you know, like even questions of hiring and firing. And let's forget about firing for a moment because it's a very complicated and different topic. But when hiring new people, so often the interviews are mostly about skills. Can you do the job? Can I do the job? Do I like the people? It's not enough in my mind about introducing to the person what is the purpose of the team or the organization that they would be joining. What is the culture of the team or organization that they would be joining? What are the agreements that exist? What are the processes and procedures and systems that are in place And is that something that the person feels aligned with? It's not like there can never be a change. But if I come into a place not liking it and thinking, well, I will change it, it's exactly the same as entering a relationship with someone thinking, well, I love this and this and this about the person, but this is a kind of fatal flaw. We'll work on changing that, which we don't say explicitly, but you know as well as I do that so many people enter relationships or stay in relationships out of hope that the other person will change. The same logic. To join an existing group, organization, team, fundamentally there is a paradoxical thing. You need to join it based on recognizing what it is, what its culture, values, purpose, and all of that is, while knowing that by definition, once you join, it's a different group, and your presence will change all of those things, but not in a kind of like, I'm here, now we need to change. That's the subtle thing. Make sense?
Yeah, I think the thing that comes up for me around that is, you know, companies, organizations have different levels of awareness of their purpose, their culture, this kind of thing, and how important it is. I think there's also a different awareness of the sublimeness of it that I think can allow for greater connection, you know. So, you know, we could just be about making widgets, or we could be about something more profound than that. And those that can be incorporated in the purpose if we, you know, bring awareness to it.
Yes, and this is kind of like loops back to the very difficult question of money, which is so many organizations, not all, but so many organizations fundamentally exist for the purpose of creating wealth for the individuals or entities that founded them. And that creates an intrinsic moral dilemma and integrity dilemma for many people. How can we create a statement of shared purpose when we all know that we are here to enrich the owners? You see what I mean?
Yeah, and as someone who has gone to business school, I couldn't agree more with the importance of dealing with that issue.
What? Tell me more. What happens in business school that is relevant to this?
Well, that fundamentally, you know, the purpose of an organization, of a company, let's say, of a for-profit company, in the eyes of many people, especially people who align themselves, I think, with a lot of what business schools tend to educate people around, is to make money for the shareholders. That's the primary purpose. And anything that else is a compromise and undermining the intent. And so in the eyes of people who espouse that, anything else is sort of a distraction, basically. And you can do other things as well, but your first and primary purpose is to make a profit, make money for your shareholders, for the owners.
Yeah. And to me, there's a direct relationship between this and the fact that the majority of employees and companies don't feel engaged. If you're making...
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, the complexity of it is, in part, is that at the end of the day, at least in our modern economy, to stay in business, you have to make money. But and so for a lot of people in these positions, they do have higher aspirations, and they recognize that, at least in our economy, that in order to fulfill those higher aspirations, they sort of have to first make money, and then they have the flexibility to do other things. that's sort of a reality of our current economic model, that, you know, companies that want a higher purpose than just making money struggle with.
Yes. Yes, I think that you're pinpointing the kind of like the fundamental issue. And since we're looking now at the level of a team, one of the ways that people sort out this inherent tension is by identifying with their team and not with the company. And in my mind, that is something that humans can do. Let me see the words that I want to say to this. It's recognize what is the sphere of influence and meaning that I can have, and within that, infusing it with purpose. So to go back to the example of that admin finance team, to be a hub of support to all organizational functions, underneath that is so that, you know, the owners can make money. And you can uncouple it and get to a place of pride. I mean pride in that simple sense of having a really positive satisfaction of a job well done, of purpose delivered, of doing your best, and derive a sense of meaning from being part of the team, even if they are not identified with what the company is doing. So the team is the place where people's sense of how their work life is most prominently plays out. You know, people may have, you know, kind of like thoughts and things about quote unquote management and the big bosses or whatever. And most of the time, what they are occupied with is their task and how they interrelate with the people on their team. So if we can bring meaning to that and empowerment to that, it can A, improve people's lives, and B, it can empower them as a team to gradually, you know, branch outward to see what can be changed elsewhere. That's a different animal, but I'm appreciating, without knowing how to resolve the tensions that you are calling attention to. Anything else, or are you complete with this thread?
Just sort of a curiosity, which maybe I can just hold on to, but a curiosity about the carrying the connection to purpose to the larger organization rather than simply to the team that we're in, which is much more accessible for most people.
What is more accessible?
What's more accessible is the connection to the team that they're in, and whatever sense they might have of the purpose, even if it isn't overtly named and discussed and apparent to everyone.
Yes, I think that you know, there's a lot of complexity about how do you create a sense of overall purpose and meaning to the operation of an organization that is there primarily to support profit. And within that, I think that one of the things that we can see is that there is a spectrum. Okay, they're all there to make a profit, but some of them do harm in order to make profit, and others along the way do a lot of good. All of that can exist. So it's way beyond what I even know how to handle or think about. I just am aware that the more there is clarity of purpose, again within a team and even beyond, the more meaningful and satisfying people's sense of their work life would be. I think that's where I'm hoping we can land and close this thread. If that makes sense, if you have more, I'm happy to hear it.
Sounds good to me. Thanks.
Okay. So, there's purpose, and then once there is a purpose, there are lots of things that go into a team functioning well. And in particular, the question that I am wanting to focus on today is how much of our time do we dedicate to doing the purpose, and how much of our time do we dedicate, and what do we do in that time to support our ability to be a team working towards that purpose rather than a random collection of individuals. The purpose is what binds us together to begin with, and then there is the relationships, the agreements, the decisions, the feedback, the conflicts, and all of that requires attention, which, if it's not given, gradually erodes the trust and goodwill within a team, so that more and more over time, the team is no longer a team. Even if it had a purpose, it becomes, like I said, a collection of individuals dividing labor, interfacing as little as possible because it's no longer pleasant, and without the kind of amazing synergy and breakthrough and problem-solving capacities that emerge from working together as a team. So that's kind of like the overview. I want to see if there's any more comment or question, and then I would want to divide you into groups, but Lori, don't do that quite yet, because I will have some questions to ask. And let's see, Helen.
Maybe I'm drawing the border too wide now, but I'm struggling to fit in the kind of teams I often see where people are very much individual contributors. And maybe that goes back to what you said. Then first doing the work and seeing if they somehow can even see a team around themselves.
I'm sorry, I stopped hearing you well. So the last thing, can you say that again?
I was struggling with how to adapt, like how to match what you said to some situations I am familiar with.
Uh-huh.
Where people are working very much as individuals, with individual targets. But while I formulated my question, I thought that maybe the answer goes back to what you first said, that in such a situation, we would need to do even more work for people to be able to see a team structure.
Yeah, one of my passions is the question of how do we create structures and systems and agreements that are such that as individuals, we wouldn't have to work so hard to create human relationships in the workplace. Right now, it depends on individuals being, you know, willing to do something to make it happen. I'm not talking about your team because I know nothing about your team. I'm just talking about, you know, as a social phenomenon in so many workplaces where people are, if they don't put conscious individual attention, the structure of the workplace is not conducive to human relationships. Is that something that we are aligned? We may not be, and it's fine. I just want to know.
That helps me, Mickey. Thank you.
Tell me how it helps you.
It helps me see that in these people I'm thinking of, that, well, it makes me curious, actually, and hopeful that by bringing attention to creating such structures mm-hmm. that I hear you refer to, that could improve the situation.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So now is the time to divide into groups. And here is what I would like to do about it. In the handout that you received, there were a bunch of questions, and I would like to know who engaged with those questions and has something that you could bring to a small group to discuss together. Press 4 if that includes you, and then we will spread out those people amongst the groups. Okay, so Lori, based on what I'm seeing, I would say you create groups of 3, and there will be one group of 4. And here's what I would like you to do in your small group. Pick a topic. In most groups, there will be only one person who worked on the questions. There may be, I don't think there will be any group with 2 people. So you take the issue and take everything that we've talked about so far today and apply it to the situation along with the answers to the questions that the person had, and see what you come to. What would help that team function more effectively in terms of having the relationships and the system structures, support, purpose, all of these things that could really help this team? And we'll go in the conversation for about 10 minutes. Then I will check with you to see if you need more time. And at the end, I will give you 2 minutes to kind of like summarize it and pick someone that will be ready to discuss it with the whole group afterwards. We probably won't get to all of them, but I would love for all of them to be prepared. And then we'll come back as a group to explore what emerged in your small groups. So first of all, I would like to know if anybody has questions about what I'm asking you to do in the group. If so, press 1. Okay. Yes, there is a question. Let me find it. Yes, Jan.
Thanks, Mickey. So if you're one of the people that said 4, so you went through the handout and you did. So the role would be then to basically briefly share with the group what
yes.
your findings were from going through those questions and open it up to really discussion.
Yeah, and the discussion is informed not just by your own reflections before the call, but also by the conversation we've already had.
Okay. And focusing on what would help this
yeah.
team function more effectively. Okay, thanks.
Yeah. It's kind of like, it may be that you will go, light bulb, we never came up with a shared purpose, so that's what we need to do.
Okay.
Or it may be that you will go like, oh my God, we essentially never discussed how we work together and what would make us function better. So let's have a series of meetings or a retreat or something to discuss that and figure out our systems. Whatever it is, you just kind of like really make it practical, not just like a general okay. principle, but what would it look like?
Okay. Yeah? Thank you. Yeah.
Uh-huh. All right. And then the last thing just a second. Lori, did you see that there is, I think that is all handled. Okay, so.
I've been on mute. So sorry. Yes, I did see that, and I've taken care of it. I'm going to put it down.
Yes, I see. No. Okay.
Okay.
So, that last thing is the small group are being recorded for the people who are not on the call. So if you prefer not to be recorded, please press 4. And then Lori will go to another group. Okay, so Lori, how about this? Ring the bell at 5 and then at 10, and then I will check in with people to see if they need more time. And then we'll go from there.
Okay. That sounds good.
Okay.
All right. And so in a moment, now you can hear one another in your group. And if you have any background noises, just remember you can mute your phone. And if you have some trouble with sounds, go ahead and just put up a 2 and I'll come to your room. All right. Here we go, everyone.
Welcome back, everyone. It's time for us to connect and hear from you again. I would love to know which group would like to share what emerged from your group and what we can both learn from and with your group about this topic of how to focus on the connection and relationships while doing the work. Karen. Hi, Karen. Are you muted? Oops. Popped off. Okay, let's start with Rhonda then.
This is Rhonda. Our group compared and contrasted two subgroups that I have. One that I just thoroughly celebrated, that we have a clear purpose. And when I calculated it, we really do spend about 10% of our time, meeting time, really connecting. And it's a very natural, easy connection. And then I shared about another group I have that isn't quite at that connection stage. We're doing all right on mission and purpose, but I'm not really feeling that connection. And where we ended was with people who aren't comfortable or aren't used to connection type questions, what's a good way to bring that forth and bring it forth in a way that is inviting, but doesn't invite people to feel uncomfortable. So one of my ideas was a quick go-round of tell me, one thing on this project that brings you enthusiasm and one thing that brings you frustration. And someone else was considering the idea of asking, how are you today? Tell me what you bring into the room. Go ahead.
Can we pause here for a second? Because these two different questions illustrate that distinction that is so intangible and hard to make, but this is, I love it because it shows it. The distinction between connection for connection's sake and connection in support of purpose. So when you ask people, what is something you are celebrating about this project and what is something that is challenging for you or whatever your words are, we are both getting to know people and getting to know people in the context of their work and in the context of what will make their work more helpful, how they can work better together, how they the project can go better. When you ask people, how are you today, it's not directly focused. It's not specifically relevant. See the difference?
I do. And in my group that is working so well together, that 10% of pure connection time really, truly has nothing to do with the project. One example I gave was we were talking about cell phone covers. You know, another example is we were joking around about, you know, me trying to give a little pep talk and it went off track. But we weren't joking about the pep talk. It was not. So I really do see the distinction. And is one better than the other? Does it matter?
Okay, I can only give you my own opinion, and I would be curious to hear also from you and from others. In my opinion, if you have connection that is just human connection, it greases the team, and it's wonderful in that regard. It isn't necessary to have that kind of connection for a team to function, nor is it always doable to have it because, like you said, there may be people who are not comfortable with it. The connection about the work, to me, is necessary. So even in the team that is functioning well, where there is all this chummy energy, I wonder what will happen if there is a major difference around, you know, a decision that has to be made. Do you see what I mean?
I'm not quite sure on that last part about the decision that has to be made. Can you just repeat that again? If I get it.
Yeah. So the group of people that are, you know, that are working really well together that you named, that are joking and all of that. How many people are in that group?
Five.
Five.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, five.
Does the group, are there times when the group is called upon to make decisions together?
Yes, on a regular basis.
Okay. So what will happen if there's a major disagreement in that group? Do you know?
Yes, because there has been major disagreements in that group. What has tended to occur is the one of a couple of things. Either the more senior members of the team will say, try it my way, you know, at a certain point. Okay, we're going to try it my way and see if it works. Or if we have enough time and it will work for the whole team, then we'll say to the more junior member, nope, we're going to try it your way. I might be wrong. So it's very balanced. It's kind of, sometimes it goes one direction, sometimes it goes the other direction. In terms of,
yeah, I get it. So it sounds like you may have this thing that I call a magical team. What I mean by magical is a group of individuals that by some stroke of luck work together well without necessarily having to attend to how they work together. It just works. I've been on such teams. It happens. If that's the gold standard, we are doomed. So my question is, how do we make teams work well together reliably without having for it to be that we all love each other and somehow without any effort synergize. Do you see now the question?
Yeah, so I'm doing this comparison between sort of this magical team and, for lack of a better term, this real team.
Well, I wouldn't say real team, just a team that doesn't work well together by itself. If it doesn't happen automatically, which sometimes it does, and in my experience, very often it doesn't, then does that mean we just have to replace the team, or are there things that we can do to make it work better? And in my experience and thought, creating connection that is relevant to the team's purpose is likely to be more comfortable for people, less challenging, and to also build trust and cohesiveness. That's number one. So far, makes sense or not?
Well, it very much makes sense, because the second team is doing okay. I'm just seeing how I can imagine they could do better. And in a connecting question that was relevant to the team, I think really has the possibility of really connecting, because they really, really want to contribute. They really want to succeed. All of them, every single one.
Yeah. So, so in that sense, then I would say some of it is just to create a feeling of connection, a feeling of something positive. For me, I find that doing work relevant celebrations is a fantastic tool. I learned it from Kit Miller when she came to be the director of Bain VC for a few years. We groaned initially. It's like, we have to do this thing again. And so she seeded the field for a long time. She was saying, okay, you don't want to do celebrations, you don't have to. I will do mine. And anybody that wants to join me, join me. And gradually more and more and more and more people joined. And it became an amazing thing, because A, it is a way for people to learn what each one is doing. B, it's a way to connect with the purpose. C, it's a way to have a positive feeling about we are actually accomplishing something. So that is my favorite thing about just simple connection. And then beyond that, there is the, having time set aside to look at how we function together and to give and receive feedback about that. That is essential for a team to be sustainably working well together. Is that making sense to you?
Yes, and I'm interested in a piece about feedback. I want to consider that more.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. The piece about creating those systems, that is something that is more, I was more going to get into that in the last segment of the course, that is about, creating systems and culture, but obviously it's a very artificial separation. So I see that it's coming up. Having ongoing mechanisms for feedback in my mind is an absolute essential ingredient for any entity to learn. Without feedback, we don't learn. So if a team doesn't have mechanisms of sharing feedback, it will just function as well as it's functioning, but won't learn and adapt well to changing circumstances. That's my belief. I don't I don't know if that's your experience, but that's what I have observed and noticed. More or
I'm very complete, and I want to share that I really want to consider this idea of group feedback. I have only thought about it in terms of individual feedback.
Yeah. It's like, you know, imagine going in a circle and just sharing. You know, everybody says, you know, what is something in the last month or the last 2 months or however often you do it that has worked well in how we function as a team? And what's something that you have observed that you would like us to learn to do better?
Absolutely, yeah. And we do, and as you say that, I realize that we do post-project lessons learned similar to that, and I can imagine those being much more fruitful.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. Karen.
Yes, Mickey, I regret that I pushed the wrong button earlier, so I am ready to talk if you can hear me.
It was hilarious because there you are. and I'm saying, okay, Karen, I think you're muted, and bang, you got off the call.
Yes, so thank you for taking me back. Well, I'm working both on the working group and the steering committee for a group that is trying to bring a week of compassion together for our whole city, and there's about 22 different nonprofits. And as I was talking to my breakout group, I had thought I had identified our group purpose, and we realized that I was actually speaking about tasks and mm-hmm. What needed to be done. And then I recalled that when we started, the 22 different representatives got together. It was late in time. We kind of just started jumping into, well, we're going to be on this committee, and you're going to be on this, and you're going to be on that. And when we broke off into the steering committee, which we didn't even realize was going to be a steering committee, having taken your courses the past few months, asked for could we identify a shared purpose, which was interpreted as a vision or mission statement. And so then we had 3 pages of definition of what compassion was, and I'm not sure we actually got to shared purpose, and we dove back into our tasks.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm finding it difficult to have that voice to say, you know, this would be really, really
yeah.
helpful to have this.
Okay, so here's kind of like my off-the-cuff intuitive advice to you. Do you have a sense for yourself of what the shared purpose is?
Yes.
Can you say it in one sentence?
To bring awareness to compassion and service within our city.
Okay, and tell me why that is important. I'm not saying that it isn't. I'm not saying it isn't important. I want you to be able to state what's the importance of bringing awareness of compassion to your city.
A community building and inclusion.
Okay, so I would then rephrase your purpose, because purpose has to be inspiring somehow. So I think if you say to build a community in the city through, you know, bringing awareness of compassion, I can't remember all the words, but you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
There's something
mm-hmm.
about it that captures the passion more fully for me mm-hmm. than just bringing awareness of compassion to the city. Does it feel like that to you?
Yes. Uh-huh.
So then, you know, just do a tiny bit more wordsmithing of this, and then just bring it to the steering committee and say, you know, I so totally see that the way I was going about it, I so wasn't clear on what I mean. And I now have a sense of what our shared purpose is. And I may be off, but I would love to share it with you all. And tell me if you think that captures the passion that got us together. Read it out loud. They like it, they don't like it, they tweet, mm-hmm. whatever. Then you have it.
Mm-hmm. That's really helpful because we've spent time in a couple meetings discussing, you know, words like suffering and all these words that go into defining compassion. At this point, I really don't care what it means. So this is helpful in clarifying that we don't actually have to define anything. We're just saying what it is we hope to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great. And
go ahead.
Yeah, no, you go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the other thing that came up in our small group today was, you know, because we all come from different organizations and we're all have a lot of energy and we have our way of doing things. When it came to functioning as a group, there was some what I would call belief systems that maybe hindered the functioning. And then there was never a question of like, who's going to facilitate and how are we going to do this? Until it came to a point like, gosh, we really need a facilitator. And so one person took it on. And in the group feedback here today, one of the ladies said maybe, you know, go around the table and get an opinion and then reflect on how you're working together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really believe that there's some discomfort for people in talking about how well are we working together. And that discomfort prevents people from having those conversations. And to break through that discomfort and actually have the conversation brings the relief of truth and actually mm-hmm. ends up bringing people together.
Mm-hmm.
And if, you know, if you are not sure there's enough trust, then focus only on positive feedback. You know, mm-hmm. what are some of the things that you value about how we work together? And we are not going to talk about what isn't working, only about what is working well. And then the second question is, how can we have more of that? It's a kind of like there's a whole field called appreciative inquiry that works on creating change only through focusing on what works and how to have more of it. I'm not an expert at all on that. But it is something that that the energy of it makes sense to me. So if we don't have enough trust to talk about all of these things, you can just focus on what is working well. One more thing, and then there are two people who pressed 5 that I want to give them the mic right away, but obviously not both at the same time. I want to say that this principle of coming with a proposal rather than a blank emergent field is something that helps in meetings and in groups working together. Often we are afraid of coming with a proposal that because it will look like we are trying to impose something or whatever, and so we come and say, let's talk about X. And then there is this kind of like blank field and people are overwhelmed. Whereas if you come with a proposal and say, this is my first draft, it may be completely shitty and awful, but I would like to start, you know, tell me what you like about my proposal, what you don't like about my proposal. We may completely drop it off. It's a starting point that kind of like allows for more focus and direction.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. All right, Leslie and then Naomi.
So I was just jumping in. I was in Karen's group, and my impression was less that it was about the feedback about the process and more that they had defaulted into a decision-making, which was that the de facto leader of the group, when she was able to kind of block a decision just because she wasn't aligned with it. And then ultimately, like, you know, I think she said 4 weeks later, someone else said, well, hey, I think we should, you know, just go for this alternate venue. And then they finally moved forward in this other direction. So it was, it was, I was talking more about, like, okay, so you actually had discovered how you make decisions, even though you never came to any agreements about how you make decisions.
Right. It's like to first know what is going on and have a shared understanding of it is a huge step. Once you get there, you can then decide together, well, this is how we have been deciding things. Is this how we want to be deciding things? And that's kind of like the next step then.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thanks. And let me hear from Naomi.
Hi. Actually, hearing that dynamic, it changes what had popped into my mind. What I was wanting to contribute is I've found that articulating the shared purpose has been so transformative over the last few months, like in a meeting when I can feel people are stuck or when I can feel there's not action, because it's like, is this what we're trying to achieve? Do we kind of all agree on that, or is it something else? And that kind of seems to shift the energy. And one thing I found that I wanted to contribute was it helps to ask or to articulate what it is you think you're wanting people to actually do. So at the end of the Compassion Week, what is it that you would want the community to be doing? What would that look like? So it might be that, you know, people are actually more inclined to take action or they're more inclined to donate.
Right.
And I've found that articulating it in terms of an action, people see it as not a wishy-washy vision. They're like, oh, okay, that's what we're trying to do. Okay, well, if we pick that venue, how would that actually help people be more inclined to take, you know, donate or, whatever.
Yeah, it's really tricky because I think you need both. You need an inspiring picture of the purpose to kind of like mobilize and inspire and motivate people. And you also need the very, very, very concrete A, B, C. What are you trying to accomplish and how will you measure success? Both are necessary. And often people can do one or the other.
And it doesn't have to be right down to the measurable level, but just to help people picture a shift. Like, it might be that that people are more inclined to stop and listen to somebody who looks bad. We want to build a community that might look something like X. But then hearing that there's a dynamic that it sounded to me like that there's one key influencer who ultimately is going to make the decisions, I would then also be thinking it's actually probably trying to figure out a way of articulating a vision, observing them and articulating a vision that seems to align with what they, what they're inclined to agree with, because it'll build trust and influence, I would think. But
Thank you. Jan and Magdalena, and I think that will probably take us to the end. Sorry, just a second. Karen, did you have something to close the loop with?
I did. Can you hear me? I wanted to say that what happened was we actually didn't know. This is a person that kind of brought us all together, invited us, and we didn't know what the how the decisions were going to be made. And it was because of this belief system that was dependent upon scarcity. You know, one venue cost money and one didn't. That we kept going with that choice. Until finally we were realizing we lost a month in decision-making.
Yes.
Did that clarify?
You can look at it as having lost a month, or you can look at it as you learned something in that month. And if you had not taken that month, that piece that you learned might have been kind of like consuming energy in the background. You never know about these things.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Jan.
I guess from my group, I just wanted to share, we're talking about a planning committee. that I'm on at my work. It's a group of volunteers that come together to plan the only communications that our department has once a month for the year. And we have a lot of enthusiasm, but we lack a lot of these things. We don't have an articulated purpose, even though in one sense it's kind of obvious. That's one of the things I'm drawing for this call, from this call, that it would really increase the kind of engagement and I'm thinking the wherewithal of team members to sort of put up with a inadequate collaborative process if we had a sort of more inspiring, sort of grounding kind of vision articulated. We don't have a way to make decisions in any collaborative way, so it's kind of unsatisfying. People are sort of praised for their ideas and then they sort of oddly get decided by the leader. And the final piece, which is why I'm, you know, a little concerned about the group, is just the logistics, the communication logistics, that, you know, we're all on a black box and everyone either doesn't speak at all or speaks at the same time and then certain people dominate the call. So we don't have good meeting logistics either. So yeah. A lot of enthusiasm, but a lot of potential to run aground.
Yeah, one of the things that is kind of like a very small meeting skill that is of huge significance. It's the skill of closing loops.
Okay.
When loops are not closed, then people interpret things differently. So, for example, you have a conversation, and the conversation isn't closed, then people who spoke may think that their speaking was going to be part of a decision, but then it turns out that it wasn't. If the loop is closed, for example, if the person in the, you know, the leader says, I appreciate your input. It's going to help me in making my decision, which I will make tomorrow and communicate to everyone, then it's done. It's clear.
Right.
Or if the leader says, you know, I appreciate your input. I wish I had time to reformulate my decision based on this input because it has influenced me personally. I'm not going to be able to do that because of the time crunch or blah, blah, blah. Fine. It not being said at all in any way, it was like a discussion without an end. Or people have a discussion and then some people leave thinking that somebody agreed to do something about it when in fact no one signed on to take it as their action item and then it doesn't happen and then everybody says the meeting was useless. But
right.
What made it useless is that the loop wasn't closed. I just wanted to bring attention to that piece that seems to me important in relation to you. And I have a kind of a meeting template that I have created, basic meeting template that I am definitely hoping to send to, if Lori probably will, no doubt be happy to send me a reminder to include that in the next, with the next set of notes, a template for how to run meetings. Thank you, Jan.
Thank you.
And Magdalena, I don't know how to do justice to you in less than 2 minutes. So I am wondering if
I just have a brief question, I think.
Yeah, go ahead.
I hope so. I think it was when you were speaking to Leslie that you were speaking of work-related celebrations. Could you just give an example? Because I'm not sure that I understand it right.
Yeah. So let's say we're sitting in a team and our team, what does your team do?
It gives, it organizes trainings.
Okay. So we're sitting and you know, one person says, I'm really celebrating that in the last month, you know, organizing a training now takes, you know, an hour instead of 2 hours as it used to take because we have incorporated feedback into the process. Another person says, I'm really celebrating that this past month we got a new client that wants 10 trainings and that's going to contribute to sustainability. Is that clear enough?
Yes, 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 very much. Okay, thanks.
Okay. All right. So let's do our closing. Let's hear from two or three people very briefly. Let's see who wants to say something about what you got from today. What are you taking with you? Like a nugget, short nugget. Press one. Please, it helps me tremendously. It's like real food for me in doing this work. So if I don't hear from anyone, I kind of leave a little bit unsettled. Helen?
What I take with me is that it can be really genuine, intrinsically genuine, the contribution I give to the shared purpose. I've heard it suggested for years, and it seems like, yeah, you put a purpose on the wall, but I'm starting to see how deep it can be.
Thank you. And Rhonda?
Practicality. I'm taking practicality with me of all of this.
Thank you. Curtis?
Yes, hi. I love the distinction between connection and service to our shared purpose and connection for the sake of connection. That was very useful. Thank you.
Thank you. Naomi? Naomi? Are you muted?
Oh, I am. Sorry. Loving the idea of kicking off a project meeting each time by asking people if there's something they're really excited about on the project at the moment or something that they're stuck on and wanting some help with.
And Faye and Jan, and then we'll be done. Please don't raise your hand anymore. Faye.
Hi, Mickey. Yes, I'm really excited about the importance of closing the loop. And as a facilitator of a group, to make sure that whatever comments are made are actually completed in one way or another and acknowledged. Thanks.
Uh-huh. And Jan, you get the final word for today.
Hi, Mickey, I love the expression, I'll take it with me, to have the conversation to bring the relief of truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Love it.
Thank you. All right. Bye, everyone.